Mr. Burgundy, you have a massive erection.
You can throw out all those great backs and great quarterbacks and great defensive players throughout the country and in this conference. But there's going to be one team that's going to play solely as a team. No man is more important than a team. No coach is more important than a team. You raise me
up. This is Michigan, for God's sakes.
This is The Sophisticated Boner, a Michigan Man podcast, for your listening pleasure.
Good evening, and welcome to the fifth episode of The Sophisticated Boner, a Michigan Man podcast. I am your host, Mark the Nomad, and I am joined by my Australian co-host, the kangaroo rapist, Joshua Henschke. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm doing. You have nothing to say? I just called you a kangaroo rapist.
It changes every week. You just get used to it.
All right. Special guest this evening, a fellow writer for the Big House Report, one of the most successful trolls on Twitter, my favorite, Lance Gordon. How are you tonight?
Wow, I'm your favorite. That's awesome.
My favorite troll.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you for the qualifier there, but that works.
You have a special knack for getting the Ohio State fan base riled up that I am increasingly impressed with every time you manage to get them to take the bait.
Well, hopefully some of them are listening and I can get them to take the bait again tonight.
Oh, they're listening. They're not going to admit to it, but we've got some listeners.
Awesome.
We've got more Sparty listeners, I think, than we do Buckeye listeners, truth be told.
That's awesome.
All right, so let's get into the chicken dance here. How do we feel post Notre Dame last game in the Big House for at least the foreseeable future, and the Wolverines come out victorious 41-30. Devin Gardner has four touchdowns. What do you guys think? What stuck out?
Well, I think, you know, the major thing is, you know, the play of Devin Gardner. I mean, besides that one, you know, the interception that turned into a touchdown that probably should have been a safety, he was basically flawless. And, you know, the team, you can tell what the team is like now with a quarterback that can actually throw. I mean, that's pretty much evident. You got Gallen, who's an absolute beast. Like I've said all week, I think he's going to be the next 1,000-yard receiver. There's no doubt in my mind that's going to happen. He's just, like, the whole team, I was just really impressed with the whole game. I mean, it shouldn't have been as close as it should have been, but it was just a great game overall.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, in the past, we've had quarterbacks like Henny and Navarre who, you know, they didn't exactly have rocket feet where they could run for a lot of yards. And then we had Denard who, if you loaded the box on him and made him throw and he had a good defense, he was going to struggle mightily. But now we have Devin who's kind of the best of both worlds. You load the box on him, he can hit a receiver all day long. And you saw that he could still get some long gains on the ground too.
I think the thing that impressed me the most about Devin Gardner's play, you saw that they set the tone early. Notre Dame with Diaco, they blitz nonstop. It is nonstop pressure. And I think that Notre Dame came into that game thinking, well, if we just follow the Denard Robinson script, this kid's going to make mistakes if we put pressure on him. You know, last year, Notre Dame forced 6 turnovers. Denard was responsible for 5 of them. But the first play of the game, they blitz hard, and he throws a perfect strike to Dilio. And, you know, he just the finesse and the spots that he put the ball into, not just when he, you know, when the waggle was working, but when he was under considerable pressure, the fact that he was completing those, Notre Dame, I don't know if Notre Dame's defense is overrated considering that the people they lost in the linebacking core, but they returned a lot of guys and they put a lot of pressure on him and he passed seemingly every test save the one play that should have just been a safety where he, you know, he tried to be Superman.
Yeah, but can we just talk a second how reliable Drew Dilio is? I mean, that guy is just anywhere you need him to come up big, he comes up big. I mean, that guy.
Grit.
He's one of my favorites. You know, anytime you need a first down or anytime you need a touchdown, that guy is always there and he always comes through. It's awesome. And it's just, you know, some little white guy that probably wouldn't be there in a regular Michigan squad, but, you know, really just happy to have him either way.
Can we just I'm sorry, Lance.
I was going to say something about grit. That's like synonymous with white athletes who are doing positions not traditionally for white people.
Absolutely. Let's go ahead.
Wes Welker's got grit. Zach Novak. All right. All right. That's just all I wanted to say about that.
Those are the only white guys you could think of.
I'm sure the list goes on, but you get the point.
Can we just go ahead and get rid of all of the white receiver stereotypes? Any buzzword that is associated with a white receiver?
Scrappy.
Scrappy. Okay, we got that. We already used grit.
Grit.
Gutty.
Gutty. Tough.
Slow.
Slow. Blue collar.
Blue collar, yes.
Just plays hard, you know? Gritty, scrappy, blue collar, tough guy.
The blue collar's got to be the
worst. He's a workhorse. A workhorse in practice.
I wish we could have 11 guys just like him.
Yeah.
The Kovacs line. Who also is gritty and tough and scrappy.
Yes.
Oh, very.
So let's talk a little bit about the defense. No, absolutely negative pressure on Tommy Rees. Now, I know he's a tough guy to get a handle on. He gets rid of the ball. They run a lot of short routes. But that whole idea of rushing four, what's the phrase they say? You got to earn the right to rush four. And right now, the only guy on that line, well, the only guy that got a sack was Brennan Beyer, but there was no consistent pressure. Frank Clark didn't have his best game. Jabril Black was nowhere. Heitzman, he's the defensive lineman, right?
Yeah.
He's an end.
He played well. He was the only guy that I consistently saw actually getting around. His grittiness was off the charts.
Well, I think it's kind of like a little bit of both. It's a little bit of a both, like a, I wouldn't say inept defensive line, but a defensive line that's not exactly there yet, and an offensive line of Notre Dame that's really good. I mean, they returned most of their starters. So, yeah, they need to fix that issue. I mean, granted, we're playing Akron next week, so I'm sure there's going to be plenty of opportunities for growth this Saturday.
The Mighty Zips.
Yeah. They're awful, too.
We're going to talk about Akron a little bit when we get into the Big Ten Roundup.
I'm hoping that it's just because Notre Dame's chock full of five-star offensive linemen that they've developed well and are going to be elite NFL offensive linemen. And I'm hoping it's not just it's a situation where our defensive line is inept. I also thought part of the game plan was to stop the big play. And as tempting as it was to bring the blitz, Michigan would lay back and, play behind and stop the big play. And really, you didn't see Notre Dame get the big plays like they have pretty much any other year that Michigan has played them in the last half decade.
Well, it was a lot of dink and dunk, a lot of, you know, force you to make a mistake. And I do believe that Madison thought going into that game that the D-line would get more pressure and force more mistakes. But that just wasn't the case. But they still stuck to the game plan and played soft and didn't get beat deep. You know, that's the staple of Madison's defense. Make them earn it. Bend but don't break. And it was kind of refreshing to see them, you know, when they got down to the red zone to force that turnover on downs, to force the turnover right before the half, when there were pressure situations, when Tommy Rees felt the pressure, not just of, you know, what they were doing defensively, what they were giving them, but what the game situation was. That guy, he's a very talented quarterback that makes those pressure mistakes right before halftime to near the end of the game. It's classic Tommy Rees.
Yeah. And also, you know, Raymond Taylor and Blake Countess had two great games. I think what Countess have two interceptions or
yes.
I don't know. Yeah. Two interceptions. I mean, it's just amazing, you know, a difference a year makes when he's out there. That's two weeks in a row that we've had interceptions, and you didn't really see that very often last season. So I really think that Countess was the missing piece to that, you know, defensive back group too. So, and it's only going to get better from year to year too, which is awesome to think about, but, you know, not to get too far ahead of myself, but yeah.
I thought Taylor got picked on a little bit. and he was not always making the plays, but at least after they got the catch, he'd make the tackle. So they had that going for him. It'd be worse if he was, you know, letting them catch it and then run for extra yards. And yeah, that goes along with the bend but don't break philosophy.
Right. Didn't he blow up that screenplay too? Right. Was that in the fourth quarter, third or fourth quarter, something like that? He had that. He blew up that screenplay or something.
He did. That was when they eventually forced the turnover on downs. That was either Notre Dame's second down or third down play as they were getting close to the end zone.
Yeah.
So another guy that got picked on while we're focusing on the defense was Desmond Morgan, who, you know, when he comes up and plays the run, he's fantastic. But dropping back in coverage, that's where we miss a Jake Ryan. And luckily, I think there's no real defensive test until maybe Penn State. I don't think we'll have Ryan back by that game. But Ryan was missed for not only his coverage ability, how he runs sideline to sideline and run support. But when if they get a healthy Jake Ryan back, the sky's the limit.
Definitely agree. And I'm not sure even Penn State has the weapons or the ability to exploit that at this point. You know, they have that, what's his name, that
Robinson,
really good receiver. Yes, but I think Kaunas can get in there and shut him down or at least hold him to minimal numbers. And I'm not sure if Hackenberg is ready for that. You know, that whole like Madison defense at this point of his early in his college career. We can get into that later, too.
Well, let's talk about the idea of only having one receiver, because technically Michigan only has one receiver, Jeremy M. Effingallen, who had over 200 yards of total offense. They focused on the 180 yards he had receiving, but he also had a carry for 22 yards, which put him, he accounted for almost half of Michigan's yards. Insane talent, but you've got this one receiver and teams are going to start blanketing coverage towards him. Jehu Chesson had an amazing block on his touchdown, but he's got to see some more targets, and Devin Funchess has got to get more active in the passing game. He's still a liability as a blocker, and if he can't start catching balls or getting open or them running design plays for him, I feel he's going to get passed by Jake Butt, because Jake Butt is playing the line of scrimmage tough, and he gets open.
Well, Jake Butt had the chance to be a hero on that. He just barely dropped it. The throw was just a little bit off from Gardner. It would have gotten him a touchdown. But he was getting targets, and he'll continue to. He's a big guy, and like you said, he does get open, and he does get in there and block too, which, you know, if you don't block as a tight end in the Borges offense, you're not going to see the field very often.
Yeah, the fact that we've only seen prominent play from one receiver is kind of a scary thought. But like you said, it's just Chesson's not getting looks. You know, Joel Reynolds, I don't know if he's exactly healthy or not, but I mean, he had a nice catch against Central. So I think once the season goes along, I think everyone else is going to get incorporated. Obviously, Gallon's going to get his looks because him and Gardner have that rare connection between quarterback and receiver. It's incredible. But I think other people really need to step up. Funchess, definitely. I'm kind of shocked at how little he's seen as far as, you know, passes and touches come his way. But like you said, he needs to, definitely work on his blocking in order to get incorporated more in that offense.
I think this is really where you miss Amaro Darbo, who's out for the season. He was going to be that big target, too, reliable possession receiver. And he, even though he hasn't gotten that playing time yet, he was highly touted as a recruit, and rave reviews coming in on him during the camps.
Yeah, he's a guy that it's very disappointing considering all the report. You know, Michigan doesn't release a lot of information, but what little information was getting out was all positive about Darbo. I don't know if he was able to get a red shirt out of this. Did he get a red shirt? Did he end up redshirting for that? Do you guys know?
I would assume so. He didn't get redshirted his freshman year, so I'm assuming there's a medical waiting for him.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's going to have a year to get healthy. You've got some studs coming in next year with Drake Harris, who has the potential to see the field early. But I think having Darbo and Chesson next year will be a huge luxury. I think we need to realistically I know it's only the second game, but realistically start worrying about Gardner not coming back next year. The guy's got pro potential off the charts. He's getting compared to Colin Kaepernick. He's getting, you know, compared to Randall Cunningham, and that's some high esteem.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's kind of, that's a scary thought. So that's definitely why I would love to see, you know, especially next week, Morris get more looks out there. I would love to see him get a half if possible, but because you never know. I would love to think that Gardner will pull a Lawan and stay, because I really believe that Lawan really set the standard for juniors looking to enter the draft. But I don't know. It's a scary thought without Gardner, because, if you get a team with Gardner back next year, that's a huge victory. I mean, Absolutely. That's huge. Well,
not only is it a big victory to get him back, but just the thought of, you know, how friendly our home schedule is this year. It would be equally bad as far as a road schedule next year. And looking at going to Ohio State, Michigan State, Notre Dame, Nebraska, that's going to be tough for anyone with limited experience. And right. Morris, while he's highly touted, he still has that limited experience right now.
Yeah, he needs to get as many reps as humanly possible. If there's a team on the schedule that will allow those reps, I think Akron is the team. UConn is total shit as well, you know, based on what we've seen.
It's like offense-only drills on that UConn defense.
It's good. You know, there's a chance for him to get some reps, but then when you get into the meat of that Big Ten schedule, I mean, when November hits, it is murderer's row. I don't, barring some, you know, unforsaken blowout, there Morris is not going to see the field after October, barring injury to Devin Gardner. And let's just go ahead and knock on some wood that does not happen.
Right. That's a scary thought, too, because every time he goes to run, I hold my breath a little bit, hoping that he gets back up when he gets hit. Because I know they were talking about this week, Hulk was talking about this week, saying that Devin doesn't like the slide, which, I mean, I don't think is a huge issue, but you never know what's going to happen, and I hope that the worst doesn't happen when he starts to take off.
Well, you see him run out of bounds sometimes, so that's good. But, yeah, he could use the slide. He is a bigger guy, so, and he doesn't, he's not going to get 20 carries like Denard would do under Rich Rod.
Yeah, I feel like Devin, just from his way, the way he runs, his mobility, he doesn't, he's very aware of his surroundings. He knows when the hits are coming. He seems to turn into the potential hits or get out of bounds. You haven't really seen him take that big shot. Now, if someone gets a free run at him, who knows what could happen? Like, you know, Ohio State had a lot of free runs at him last year and really beat the crap out of him. But Denard did not absorb damage very well. And, you know, he seemed to never really know where the contact was going to come from, and he got blown up a lot. So it's just two completely different worlds. It's like night and day. You can't compare the two as much as people want to compare it, you know, going from one really mobile quarterback to a more complete passer that can still kill you with his mobility.
Yeah, I think that Kaepernick is a good comparison for him. And Kaepernick might be a little quicker, but they both have that arm strength that just comes out of nowhere, and they can just sling it just at the drop of a hat, even on the run, as good on the run as in the pocket. And you saw the difference between, you know, Reese on the run was all over the place, but Gardner on the run, he can hit his target with ease.
Yeah, he had some very impressive throws. I'm sitting there going, wow, where did this come from? Especially on the run, too. He's got a cannons, and that's also huge, too, because if not to bring up Denard again, but if you see Denard on the run trying to throw it, he'd basically just throw up floaters, which is probably not the best way to throw a football. But anyway, don't want to bring up Denard too much here because it's not about Denard. It's about Devin here. But
absolutely.
Yeah.
Old 98.
Yep. And that's awesome, too, seeing a quarterback with 98. That was awesome. I can't believe people got pissed at that.
Oh, that's stupid. People are stupid. That's why people got pissed at that, because they're stupid.
Things to get pissed about.
Yeah, that's like telling people to sit down in the big house.
Yeah, that's that, too.
Fortunately, I was in a good section for that. I was stood up most of the game, and nobody really said anything. Might be because I'm 6'7".
You guys both got to go to that game? How nice for you. That sounds awesome.
fun times are ahead.
You sound genuinely happy for us. No jealousy at all.
I wish you nothing but the best. I'm glad you had a good time. Sounded like a really good time.
It was. It was a great time.
real good time.
The halftime show was amazing too.
Yeah. So, did you guys were you close enough, or did you have good enough seats to see any of the recruits that were on campus?
Yes, I did. I did. I don't know about you, Lance, but I did. I saw them walk by.
The thing about Josh is, I've been walking around Ann Arbor with Josh before, and he'll recognize like the third string punter on the team. He's like, "Hey, there's Kenny Allen," and there's and names all these other players. I'm like, he could be lying, but I know he's telling the truth. I'm like, how do you know this stuff? So even if I saw the recruits, I might recognize Hand, but other than that, Josh probably could pick him out of the big house crowd.
Yeah, I'm going to call bullshit. I don't really think Josh knows what he's talking about when it comes to seeing recruits. We really can't trust someone who is a descendant of a place that was a prison colony for most of its existence.
Yeah, I do my homework, so that's all I'm going to say about that. All
right.
I even pointed out Spike Albrecht to my girlfriend. She had no idea that she walked right past him, or he walked right past her, so... That was cool.
That would have been pretty cool. I like Spike.
I was walking right behind Mitch McGarry. Even though this is completely off topic, I was walking behind Mitch McGarry, and that dude is a beast. That guy is a monster.
That he would be easier to point out. I don't see too many 6'11" white guys running around, but
that look like puppy dogs,
right?
Especially that look like puppy dogs.
You should walk up and just like feel his ears. Be like, oh, puppy ears.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd love that.
He would probably let you. He seems like a very amiable guy.
He does, but he doesn't do pictures.
Really?
Yeah, he denied a couple people, but I can kind of understand why. Knowing Mr. Big Celebrity on campus, it would kind of get annoying after a while.
So he denies pictures, but you didn't find out if he denies hugs.
I didn't bother asking.
And that's you call something. Yourself a journalist.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know.
Get in there. You're scrappy. You're gritty. You're tough. Scrappy.
I'm just a, blue-collar type of guy.
You're getting the quotes. You're copping a feel.
Anyway, moving on.
Oh, this turned awkward. Yeah. This is like when I told Ace Ambender that I was going to steal his face and then go into the press box. I was like, I think I might steal your face. Are you cool with that? And luckily, he was not.
Okay. Oh, he wasn't? Oh, yeah, that's right. He wasn't okay with that.
He was like, I don't know. This is going a little weird. I'm like, just forget about it.
Stealing someone's face is generally frowned upon.
Yeah. What did we say to the Subway Domer guy that got him a little off, too? I can't remember.
I'm
we talked about
remember.
Gary Gray. He didn't appreciate that at all.
No. We talked about catfish. I'm trying to remember what else we talked about.
We talked about the 2006 beatdown.
Yeah.
It was probably, props to Josh Vault from the Subway Domer for coming on our podcast and holding his own, even though we were trying to take little subtle jabs at him. Did you follow his Twitter feed during the game? Well, you guys were at the game, so clearly
caught up with it after because I knew it was going to be a total mess. It was hilarious.
Was there a lot of butthurt?
It was a lot of swearing, drunk. I guess you could call it butthurt.
I think there at one point he talked about how he went into his bedroom after the game to sleep, and his wife was so pissed off at him or annoyed. I don't know if she was pissed or annoyed, but she went and slept on the couch, and then he ended up on the floor, so no one slept in the bed.
I think he said he wasn't wearing pants.
Yeah, pants gone.
Yeah.
So you guys want to talk some Big Ten football?
Sure, while we're here.
All right, let's do it. The sound you just heard is from the famous Cat Lab video in the weight room in the community. If you have not seen the Team Cat Lab video for Big Ten football, I suggest you YouTube it and watch it. It is essential viewing for any Big Ten football fan. We're looking at the Big Ten scoreboard, and we're going to work our way down. The first game, and the game that we're probably going to spend a lot of time on, is good old Sparty. 2-0, 4 defensive touchdowns, 1 offensive touchdown. number one defense in the country, number 125 offense in the country. Polar opposites, only scores 7 points against a South Florida team that got blown out by McNeese State. Let's talk some Sparty football.
The anti-Rich Rod.
That's the truth.
Oh, my God. I mean, that's a good analysis, Lance. Thank you. That makes me feel even better. We're trying to troll them.
I stole that from someone on Twitter, maybe Just Cover Blog. He's a good Sparty troll.
Oh, yeah. He's proficient. Him and Scott Bell.
Well, Scott Bell is the Sparty trolling guru.
He should write a book.
He really should, though. I mean, like, I've said this for the past 2 weeks, and I'll say it again. Their defense is going to keep them in ball games, and I probably will continue to say this all year long because it's the truth. I mean, granted, they've played two cream puff teams, so I don't think their number one defense in the nation is really going to last much longer. But I don't even know what the right word to call their offense is, a dumpster fire or just completely inept, which is probably a little bit of both.
A couch fire if it's East Lansing.
Yeah, couch fire.
It's some sort of super disease. It's like the disease from Contagion. You don't want to be anywhere near it. You have to quarantine yourself. If they could put their defensive players on offense, they'd probably be – well, their defense is their offense. South Florida, my alma mater, is a terrible football team. They're breaking in a new coach. They don't have a quarterback. They don't have a running back. Willie Taggart is not a bad coach, but they're going to have a really rough time getting that thing off the ground. And South Florida goes into East Lansing, and if they don't have any turnovers, there's a good chance that they win that game because one of their backbreaking turnovers was when they were on the 2-yard line getting ready to go in for at least a field goal that would have put them up. Spartan offense only scored 7 points.
Yes. Can I list off some stats here real quick?
Please.
All right. Passing leaders. Andrew Maxwell, 40 yards. Rushing, Nick Hill, 63. Receiving yards, I don't know who M. Kings is, 24 receiving yards.
Some dude.
That's 63 rushing yards is pretty solid.
Over 2 games.
I mean he almost got as much as Fitzgerald Toussaint did on the ground. But, I mean, 24 receiving yards, are you kidding me? I mean, that's absolutely awful. Like how was a defense that or excuse me offense that bad? I don't get
receptions?
It.
How many receptions did it take for him to get those 24?
hold on, I'd have to check, but I mean, okay. I'm assuming it's probably just one or two. I mean, it's that's just terrible.
Yeah, that's pretty awful. And I think it's time for D'Antonio to start asking the questions like, hey, if we defer. You know, do we instead of taking the ball, do we kick off in the second half?
Oh, I'm sorry. It was a
defensive touchdown.
It was three receptions, and Langford had 5 for 21 yards.
Mm.
So 4 yards a pop.
Yeah,
it actually makes me feel really bad for Aaron Burbridge, who was a couple of grade points shy of being a Michigan player. He didn't have the grades. He wasn't going to qualify academically. I mean, that's at least what I've heard. But now he is. Statistically, the worst offense in the country.
That's a lesson for you kids out there to stay in school.
Stay in school, because if not, you may end up in the receiving
you
core.
You might end up in the dumpster fire offense.
End up a rapper.
You maybe end up being coached by Jim Bowman, the walrus.
They need that rapper back. That rapper that was supposed, wasn't there a rapper that was supposed to play receiver for him?
Devil for life. I'll be devil for life.
He actually probably made a wise decision with that.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely. Clearly scoring more than the Spartan offense.
Yeah.
Hey-o.
Hey-o, man. I'm here all week, folks. Try the veal. So they shut down, and the ESPN headline is Michigan State shuts down South Florida 21-6. They've got a defensive player with 4 touchdowns. That's insane. Shiley Calhoun had a fumble return for a touchdown, an interception return for a touchdown. That is unsustainable. That flat out unsustainable. They had 265 yards of total offense. They also had 2 turnovers and almost 100 yards in penalties because, well, they had exactly as many penalty yards as they had passing yards.
That's terrible. How many personal fouls?
I have no idea.
Bottom line for this team, when they start playing some good offensive teams, it's definitely not sustainable. And when you start playing Michigan, Nebraska, Northwestern, and you go three and out on offense every time, that is asking way too much of your defense to try to, you know, consistently make stops, force turnovers. Eventually, they're going to get broken down by those teams and end up losing by double digits, probably to all three.
Well, we talk about how, you know, their defense is going to keep them in every game, and that's realistic. They have a defense that can keep them in every game, but they have an offense that is going to keep them out of many games. And I don't say that just because of their general ineptitude, but they're playing Western Michigan. They're playing South Florida. These teams are forcing turnovers. If they play a team that has a moderately decent defense, that offense is going to turn the ball over and put their defense in a bad situation where they're giving up short field goals or easy touchdowns just based on the fact that they can't seem to get out of their own way.
Yeah,
no, I agree. It's I don't know. I would be nervous if I was a Spartan fan right now. It's very unsure times. They need to figure something out with the quarterbacks, because this revolving door of crap quarterbacks isn't going to work. Because you, like I always say, you can't polish a turd. So it's always going to be.
Can't you always say that?
I always say that.
Well, kind of hidden always in the statistics for the South Florida game is that Shaw, the running back for South Florida, had 94 yards on 23 carries. He averaged 4.1 yards a carry. The Spartan defense, for all it said about their, you know, their ability to force turnovers, their ability to score, to keep them in games, I think that defense can be run on. And if you can establish a ground game, considering what Michigan is doing on offense now, with that extra element of Devin Gardner being able to pick up yards on his feet, convert, actually check into the right play, something Denard was not able to do. They've got a good shot to go into East Lansing. That is, if over the next 2 months, the Spartans don't find an offense.
No, I don't think they're finding an offense. They're still starting four quarterbacks on Saturday, as far as I saw on the old Twitters today.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll hop off of Michigan State, and we will take a quick trip around the Big Ten. Again, the Big Ten is rife right now with FCS teams and sacrifices as teams pad their wins early in the season before you get into the meat of their schedule. Penn State blows the doors off of Eastern Michigan. Christian Hackenberg, the freshman, he throws for over 300 yards for the first time in his career. Eastern Michigan led that game 7-0 early, and then Penn State comes back and scores 45 unanswered points. Any thoughts on this game at all, guys?
Well, I mean, Hackenberg, I think Hackenberg is going to be a good quarterback. I mean, it's obvious, you know, coming out of high school that he had some talent. And, you know, it's showing early against sacrifices. So hopefully, you know, it's sustainable for their sake. But, you know, I mean, I can't really comment much on a team like Eastern Michigan because they're not very good. So, I mean, we'll find out what their true identity is here in a couple weeks. So that's pretty much all I can say.
All I have to say about Penn State is I don't think they're going to go to a bowl game this year.
That's a really hot take, Lance. Thank you for that. So, moving around the Big Ten again, Wisconsin, number 21 ranked, they shut out their second straight opponent. They win 48-0, but it was against Texas Tech.
Tennessee.
But, I'm sorry, Tennessee Tech, not Texas Tech, because Texas Tech
would be a pretty impressive
game. They rack up 600 yards of total offense, almost 400 yards on the ground. This is a team that I am excited about not seeing potentially until the Big Ten championship game.
I agree. I mean, they're a team that just doesn't seem to want to go away regardless of who they lose or their coach. I mean, they've got, you know, their revolving door of free agent quarterback signings they've had over the off seasons past. But, yeah, they're definitely a team that, you know, doesn't want to go away anytime soon.
I'd say I think that they'd give Ohio State a tremendous run for the money, even in the horseshoe. And if that game is the tiebreaker for the you know, who plays in Indy, they can do it. They run the ball really well, and that is what you want to do if you're on the road. You want to shut the crowd down, just run it down their throats, and they do that as well as anybody. They haven't missed a beat since Bielema left. Ball, whoever, whoever's running it, they're always going to have. Yeah, they're always going to have these huge cheese-fed offensive linemen that create Mac truck-sized holes for the running back, whoever is running the ball. And they're always going to be a tough team as long as they can keep doing that.
Well, let's talk about who's running the ball. James White, their starter, gets 109 yards rushing on 22 carries. The backup comes in and runs the ball 13 times for 149 yards. And then the third-string guy comes in, 9 carries, 140 yards. You've three tailbacks over 100 yards each. That's ridiculous.
Those are video game numbers there.
I mean, yeah. It's Tennessee Tech, but this is the way to beat Ohio State, and this is just my opinion, is you have to keep their offense off the field. Their defense had to replace, I think, 7 starters. They've got very little leadership outside of Ryan Shazier on the defense and Roby in the secondary. But I'll tell you this, if Bradley Roby is the leading tackler for Ohio State against Wisconsin, Ohio State loses that game. Because if the running backs are in the secondary, that's a problem.
It kind of reminds me of the Marty Morningware era when the Lions, when they had him, they had 2 cornerbacks that were among the league leaders in tackles. And they didn't stop a lot of people that year.
No. You don't want that.
No.
So Iowa gets off the schneid after losing an embarrassing game in week one, but they only beat Missouri State by 2 touchdowns. I don't want to beat Iowa up every week. They're in a rough spot, and they've got no foreseeable solution to the fact that their coach has like a $10 million buyout. And if they're having trouble against FCS teams or, you know, low-level MAC teams, it's going to be a bloodbath in the Big Ten, especially on their side.
Yeah, they're in for a rough ride this year. There's really not much else you can really say about that. I mean, granted, Weissman rushed for nearly almost 200 yards. He rushed for 180. But, I mean, I guess that's the bright spot in that with that team because, yeah, they're another one of those teams that are going to have a tough time.
I like that game on the schedule in November for Michigan. Nice break among the Giants that they're playing.
That is true.
So we got. We're going to move on to Illinois, who shocked the hell out of me. Jumped all over Cincinnati. I know Cincinnati beat the piss out of Purdue the previous week, but it's Purdue. Go ahead.
Oh, I said who wouldn't beat the piss out of Purdue?
Yeah, Purdue. We can just jump. I don't want to talk about Purdue at all. Purdue beats Indiana State by 6 points. The same Indiana State team that gave up 73 points to Indiana in week one. So Purdue, that's your dumpster fire. They're the worst team in the Big Ten. And some reason,
definitely,
Purdue is the primetime game, 8 p.m. ABC against Notre Dame this week.
That's news to me. That's laughable. Wow. I mean, I guess they're the traditional Notre Dame rivalry, so they got to get recognized.
Oh yeah. So I mean that's not one of those things is getting beaten like a dead horse. The whole rivalry thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Michigan has a lot of rivals. Notre Dame has a lot of rivals. Ohio State has one rival and a decent rivalry. You know, starting to come to fruition with Wisconsin, but to rank the order of the rivalries, who cares, man? Michigan leads that series 24-16, hopefully 25-16 when it's all said and done. It's the chicken dance should have sealed the deal. It's just locker room talk now. That's some fuel for the fire.
That was great trolling by the stadium music guy.
Yeah, I give that top notch. That was awesome.
That's trolling in high places.
Oh yeah, that's serious. That's serious. And I didn't even know it was happening until I looked on Twitter and everyone was like, "The chicken dance." So Ohio State plays San Diego State, and they win that game going away 42-0. But the big story in that game is Braxton Miller goes out in the first quarter. Their offense doesn't skip a beat because they happen to have a backup quarterback that could start for virtually 9 of the other 11 teams in the Big. That is frustrating to know that if you, you know, not that I want to see Braxton Miller get hurt, but usually if you get to the backup, your chances significantly increase. And when your most hated rival has an excellent backup quarterback that, you know, dollars to donuts may actually run that offense better than Braxton Miller. That sucks, man. Let's try to keep Miller healthy. I think they have a better chance of beating Miller.
No, I agree. I think, you know, Kenny Gleaton is probably the best backup in the Big by far. And it is kind of a scary thought because I don't know what his eligibility status is like.
He's a senior.
Okay, yeah. Well, then never mind then. But, yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how healthy Miller comes back this week because they've got a tough opponent in Cal this week. I mean, it's not going to be easy. So, I mean, I'll be interested to see how healthy he is pretty much all season long.
Cal looked like they'd be a good competitor for Ohio State the first week when they beat North, you know, or when they gave Northwestern a close game. But what'd they do? They beat Portland State by 6 points this weekend. And I'm hoping that was just because they're looking ahead to that Ohio State game. And, you know, they're focusing on that already. It'll be a tough game. It's always tough to go to the West Coast and win. You've seen that with Michigan in the past, obviously. So it'll be tough for them. But the one bad thing is it's the one moderately tough game in a long string of cupcakes.
Yeah, their only real test is going to be going to Evanston to play Northwestern, who on offense doesn't skip a beat. They've got a two-headed monster at quarterback, and they, you know, Venrick Mark is still coming back, you know, nursing back to health, but they put up 48 points on a pretty good Syracuse team. That is Michigan's Wisconsin, so to speak, on our side of the league. If there's one game that could really trip them up, I mean, Nebraska is a good team. They've got a good offense. Michigan State, we've talked in length about their offensive ineptitude. It's Northwestern, and then everyone below them.
Yeah, one thing nice about going to Northwestern is there's a huge Michigan alumni base there, and it is always, you know, if not half, close to half Michigan fans, and it's loud Michigan fans there that are traveling to see their team play. So you won't really have a huge home field advantage. Heck, that's like a high school stadium, Ryan Field. So that really helps Michigan in that situation. But yeah, they'll be a tough team. They do have an offense that really gave Michigan a lot of trouble last year at the Big House and returning a lot of those starters, like you said.
No, I agree. I don't think Michigan loses that game. But it's going to be a game that needs to be, you know, circled in red. And I mean, they're going to be looking for revenge for last year. So, I mean, they're going to play tough. But I think that's going to be a game that Michigan will win fairly easily when all is said and done.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about Nebraska. After giving up 600 yards in their first game of the year to Wyoming, they play a depleted Southern Miss team and recover defensively, only giving up 284. Still gave up a lot of passing yards, didn't give up any rushing yards, but Nebraska wins that game 56-13. I don't want to say the black shirts are back because it's just Southern Miss. They've got a huge test this weekend when UCLA comes to town, a team that nearly beat them last year. This year they're coming into Lincoln. So aside from Texas A&M, Alabama, I think the Nebraska-UCLA game is probably the second best game of the week.
No, I agree. I think UCLA beats Nebraska this week, to be honest with you. It's, you know, they're wearing their black shirts this week. So I'd like to see, you know, UCLA come out, start quick and jump all over them, which I think they can. And, you know, the jury's still out on Martinez and Abdullah, but I do like Abdullah in that offense. I mean, Martinez had 170 yards passing last week. So, I mean, I know everyone talks about how great Martinez is, but I personally, I don't see it yet. I mean, granted, this is his last year, but I don't know. I think that's going to be a tough game for Nebraska.
Martinez doesn't always have to be great. He does have great weapons around him, which can make him look better than he really is. They have really good receivers, but that is going to be a tough test, like you guys say. That's a noon game, right?
That's a good question.
I'm not.
I hope not.
Yeah, I know. I hope not either. I don't think it is, but
yeah, it's noon. Yeah,
noon ABC game. Yeah, that's 9 a.m. for those LA kids. So I don't know if that's a factor, but I hear they've been going to practice at 7 a.m. this week, just to try to get ready for the time change. But
they're going to be on emotional high. They lost a player this week. One of their players was tragically hit by a car as a pedestrian, and you know, both teams are going to play tribute to. You know, the player that passed away, Pascual. Did you guys see Jim Morris' press conference where he freaked out on that reporter?
I keep meaning to watch it, but I didn't see it. I mean, I heard that he freaked out because he answered his phone during a press conference. I mean, who does that?
Yeah.
Like son.
Yeah.
Freaking out at press conference.
So he's at the podium. He's talking about Nick Pascual and how it was tragic. And one of the guys running the cameras gets a phone call and answers it and starts talking loudly during Jim Mora paying tribute to this guy. So he's, you know, he tells the guy to shut up and the guy apologizes, but it's like, it's way past that now. And then Mora just gets up and leaves. I mean, I totally side with Mora on this one. People can be really stupid or, you know, not be aware of the moment, but it was pretty classic. I love Jim Mora.
Yeah. He was a good hire for them. I think, you know, he kind of got a tough run in the NFL, so I think I think he's found a good home there in UCLA.
Certainly helps with USC going into the dumpster fire lately.
That too.
Local recruiting down the line and everything.
So let's look at some of the games coming up this week. I live in Orlando. A lot of UCF grads and fans around here, and they all seem very confident that they're going to go into Happy Valley and beat Penn State this weekend. They've got a great quarterback. They've got a good defense. I've been to Penn State. It's a tough place to play. It's certainly even tougher to win. You guys think UCF's got a chance to go into Penn State and beat them?
No way. I don't see that happening. I think Penn State deserves a little bit more credit than they have been getting, and I think they could beat a team like UCF. Granted, they're both undefeated right now, but I don't see UCF going into Happy Valley and beating them with that crowd. I just don't see it happening.
I'm not seeing that happening either. I mean, of course you're always going to think your team's going to go get a win, but winning on the road is tough. Winning against a big program like Penn State with a huge crowd, like Josh said, is even tougher.
So we got Akron coming to the Big House this weekend, and it starts a relatively easy chunk of the schedule for Michigan, facing Minnesota, facing UConn, facing Akron. This is a team that spreads you out, tries to beat you through the air. They don't have a very solid running game. They're only averaging 3.4 yards a carry, and that's because one of their dudes broke a 55-yard touchdown that accounts for one-fourth of their yards.
Good find on that stat, sir.
Yes. Thank you. I know math, and I like to talk about my mathematical skill. This is a team that actually lost 38-7 to UCF first game of the year, and then only beat James Madison by 2 points. They're 1-1. They got to come to the Big House. And this is one of those games where if there's going to be a game where, like we said, Shane Morris is going to get reps, it's got to be this week.
No, I agree. I wouldn't be surprised if he got a whole half. I don't see this game being anywhere near competitive come halftime. So that would be the perfect time for guys like, you know, Morris Green. I'd love to see Taco out there a little bit more too. You know, kind of incorporate more of the freshmen that you didn't use a redshirt year on too. So, you know, I think you know, there's an opportunity there for a lot of guys other than Morris.
My one concern about this game is, has Tressel been going to the practices for Akron?
Well, if there's ever a chance for us to beat Jim Tressel in any facet, it's this week.
I'll take that chance, you know.
So let's get to our – let's wrap this up. We're at 52 minutes. It's going to be a bloodletting, but who – Josh, who do you have a boner for this week for the University of Michigan?
It's got to be Jeremy Gallen. I mean, that's probably one of the best performances I've seen out of a wide receiver since, you know, the days of Manningham on Saturday. So I think he definitely keeps that up again this week. I mean, he's got the perfect opportunity, not just this week, but the next couple of weeks too. So I think that boner will sustain over the weeks.
What about you, Lance?
Do I have to use the word boner in my response also?
You have to. You just said it, so say it twice.
Okay, I can do that. I felt like Frank Clark was getting held and not called several times in the Notre Dame game. I look for him to go against a team that he grew up very close to in Cleveland and have a huge game, get a couple sacks, and that's my Michigan boner for the week.
All right. You've been baptized. All right, so... my boner for this week, I'm going to go with Derek Green. I think that if there's ever a week where you're going to see the freshman running backs get some carries, get a feel for the offense, it's going to be this week. Hopefully, this is one of those games where you watch it and you just pray that nobody gets hurt. That's it. You know, you want to get out unscathed, and you want to have a strong statistical performance. You want to see improvement, and you just want to make sure that you come out scot-free, because it would suck to lose a quality player to Akron.
That would definitely suck.
Yeah, I mean, there's no complaints here. That would definitely suck.
Yep, hopefully Tressel didn't put the bounty out on the Michigan players.
He's the senator, man. He's scot-free. He's clean, man. I just don't know why you keep riding him like that. Man.
He's more like the warden in Shawshank Redemption, if you ask me.
Well, all right. Well, hey, that's going to do it for us for this week of the Sophisticated Boner. We would have two episodes this week, but nobody wants to talk Akron football. Surprise, surprise. So this will be our episode for the week, and maybe we'll record something a little bit later. We'll do a little post-game recap after Akron, talk about the Big Ten. If not, we'll see you next week. I am your host, Mark the Nomad. You can follow me on Twitter, at Mark the Nomad, and you can follow Joshua Henschke, at TBH Report. He runs the Big House Report, and one of the writers and our good friend, a friend of the podcast and a friend of the page, Lance Gordon. Follow him at Lance Gordon. And if these two pieces of shit would actually give me some of their followers, I may actually feel like I'm a worthy Twitter competitor. You guys have a great night.